Hey yo, and here we go, another episode of We Talk Music podcast on the air and in your ear. I'm Mo, this is Brett, we're your metal nerds, and we have a true metal god with us today. Lead singer of Wolfsbane, Iron Maiden, extensive solo career. This man has a new album out, a haunting album called December Wind, and it's a pleasure to have on Blaze Bailey. Hello, Blaze.
Hello, good evening. Thank you for having me on the show, and thank you for that lovely Santa outfit that you sent me.
Well, we are truly happy to have you on. We've been fans of yours for a very long time, and so it's really exciting for us. And I'll tell you, it's doubly exciting because of how good we think December Wind is. Honestly, Blaze, this might be on my Desert Island albums list now.
Wow, that's big. That's huge. We lived it. To make it, we absolutely lived it. We did it really, really old school. I finished my tour, my heavy metal tour, with a big gig in France near Lyon. We recorded a live set from a full metal band. And then I went to stay at Thomas Fison's house, and we did some live shows, and in between, when we came back home, we did writing. And as we were in the car driving between gigs, we talk about the album and different songs and different ideas. And I stayed at Thomas Fison's house, and we would wake up and just be talking about the album, doing demos and working on different things. And it was just a complete whole way of doing it, like bands used to do in the old days. You know, you wake up and you're in the studio and you start jamming and doing things, and that's what we did. And it was a lot, because we had something going on all the time, and occasionally we'd take a break and go to the supermarket, get our food for the next day and that. But I think every moment that we were there, whether we were making dinner or having a barbecue, we'd be talking about the album. We'd be talking about in the individual songs. And one of us, it could be 10 o'clock at night, and one of us would say, you know that part there, do you think that phrase really fits? Is there a better lyric we could use there? Or do you think that we should repeat that guitar part? Or maybe there's a melody, a better melody than that, that we have there. And it was like that for nearly 3 weeks. And in the end, I think we had a result that we didn't know if it was good or not, but we knew that it was the best that we could do. And for you to say that you think it's good enough to go on your Desert Island discs is just incredible, because you just don't know. You put hours and hours of work into it. You follow your instincts, but you just don't know what fans are going to think and if anybody will like it. And it's always a very, very nervous time when you put things out there and you wait for those first reviews. And for me, the most important reviews are from fans, and that's why I rarely send any of my albums or any of my music to journalists before fans. I like the fans that support me and know what I'm trying to do to listen to it. If they say, well, it's okay, but it's not, then that's difficult, but it's honest. And I feel many times I've sent things in the past to journalists and they have an agenda. So I really like it when my fans hear my music first and have no agenda. They just, okay, well, let's see what we've got this time. And if they feel it's from the heart and they sense that it's genuine, then things normally seem to go well. But it's an album that we're very proud of, and we did a few dates in November, And all of the new songs, even though a lot of people hadn't heard them before, they just went down fantastic. It was brilliant. So it's we feel really good about the December Wind album.
No, I mean, that's fantastic. And, you know, it's interesting because when you talk about journalists and fans, I mean, we're kind of like journalists, but we're really more fans at heart. So, and I think that's what we try to bring to our show is just that element of, because I mean, we followed, like I say, we followed you for years, decades. And so it's amazing to think that as we go through how much your career has changed. And I think that's truly impressive as well.
I'm very lucky. I'm very, very lucky that through my career, I've had support of incredible people. My fans have stuck by me no matter what. And in the early days after Maiden, when I was making the Silicon Messiah album, before we were so emailed and Instagrammed and Facebooked, then people wrote letters to me and said, please continue, please don't give up, we love what you do. And it's a lot, you know, when you're really searching what you're going to do next, and well, is really is music for you. When fans send you messages and say, well, please keep going, I'm really excited about what you're going to do next, it means a lot. And in my life, with the problems that I've had, then those messages have meant a lot to me. And now I'm independent and I have all of the power of setting my own deadlines, having the artwork that I want, and putting the albums out when I want. Now it is purely for the fans, because I feel that since I started, in those early days of Wolfsbane, in the back of the van and arriving at the gig, and we did our own demos and sold them. We had our own t-shirts. We didn't have a record deal, and we just managed to keep going, and we did okay. And then when we got a record deal, we played less gigs to less people. And for me, that's not why I got into it, to be a big star. I got into it because I wanted to be a singer and go on tour and live my life on a tour bus. And then years and years later, I always felt that the fans got a raw deal, that the record company would put an album out with a track, just one track, so fans had to buy that album, even though they already had most of the stuff on it. I always felt that the fans were taken for granted by the music business. And now I am in charge, and I've got my own tiny record company. I'm an underground artist. I can say, well, no journalist will hear this before the first fan that pre-ordered the album. And that's what happened on the first two albums with Infinite Entanglement. And then on the third album, I said to a few fans that I know quite well, I said, look, people are saying that I should send the album to journalists and they should be able to listen to it. And all of the fans I spoke to said, we don't have a problem with that. So that's what I did. And we got very, very good reviews. But those reviews meant nothing compared to what I had from those first two albums from fans who said, I've just got the album and I love it. And that's what meant the most. And with December Wind, I think we've had that kind of thing as well. And we took a lot of albums with us on tour. I sell my albums at my show, and we sold out on the tour. And we still have some on web shop. But it was absolutely fantastic to be able to sing the new song, say, this is on my new album. And at the end of the night, a lot of people come up with that new album saying, oh, I can't wait to take this home or have it in my car or whatever. So it's been great. But over the years, I've been very, very lucky to have the support of so many wonderful, wonderful fans that really have supported me through thick and thin. And it's really nice to be able to do something good and for it to be appreciated by the people that have supported me most.
Well, there's no question. I mean, you're releasing a lot of albums. I mean, just getting the Infinite Entanglement albums, all three of them out over the past 3 years, that's an amazing achievement in itself.
It's been huge, and it's been a lot of stress sometimes, but when I knew that it was three albums, I said to my manager, who's absolutely incredible, wonderful, wonderful person, who he keeps me tight on the finances, but as an artist, if he's convinced of my artistic vision, he'll always try to find a way to make it happen. I said, look, it's three albums and it's 3 years. I want an album each year, and I want to bring it out on the 1st of March, and I want a tour with that album each spring, each year. And he said, okay. And then when I said, oh, I need more time, he said, no, because you've set a deadline and you have to go on tour. So it was a bit of pressure as well, but I was able to do it. And back in those early days, you couldn't say when an album came out. You'd make an album and somebody from the record company would say, oh, well, Elton John's album's got to come out on that date, so we'll have to put yours to one side. And some bands, their album never came out at all. And it was on a shelf in the record company warehouse. So I was very aware of that, and I said, it has to come out on or around 1st of March. It's Infinite Entanglement. It's a trilogy. It's one story that goes across three albums, leaving home, a journey, and then a search for redemption. And I was very, very lucky. You know, I had the support of my manager and then great guys that I work with, absolutely incredible, really patient and hard-working guys from Absolver, who are my exclusive band that I work with in the studio and on tour, and some of the people that I write with, Thomas Fison and Michelle, who I wrote a lot of the songs with for the first album. I was very, very lucky that things came together, and people now consider that trilogy as one big concept, as one thing, which it was always intended to be. So it's worked really well for me.
Can you maybe explain for the people who might not have heard it, the concept behind that trilogy, the story?
Well, Infinite Entanglement. Entanglement is a reference to quantum entanglement, and at the very, very base, the bottom of quantum entanglement, what it says is that two electrons, if they know each other, will always know what the other one is doing and instantaneously will react. So they'll know if one is pointing up and one is pointing down, they'll know. And it just made sense to me that if two electrons are like that and were made of electrons, all, you know, the atoms and particles in our body comprised of these tiny things, then why wouldn't two people that have a deep emotional connection, why wouldn't they be connected? Why wouldn't they know? Why wouldn't we have this telepathy between us when people have a deep and true love? Why wouldn't they be able to sense what the other person is doing? If they are connected emotionally, then surely their bodies, the electrons in their bodies are connected, and that's the entanglement. And the infinite is these two people being on the opposite sides of the universe and sensing each other. And the central character, William Black, does not know if he is human. They say to him, you have a journey of 1,000 years through space, because there is no faster than light travel. And to survive that journey, we need you to have this suit surgically attached to you, and you will be able to get in and out of the spacecraft, perform vital maintenance, do all of these vital things. And at the end of this journey, that you hopefully will survive mentally and emotionally of 1,000 years, this suit will be removed and you will retain your human body. And he agrees to that, but his consciousness is downloaded and taken from his human body and put into a machine. And he wakes up on board the spaceship at the start of a journey of 1,000 years, and he does not know if he is human. And so then, as the journey goes on, he realizes he has human consciousness and emotion and feeling, but he has a machine body, and he has to define himself. Am I human? What is it to be human? Is it to think and feel as a human, or is it to look as a human and have a human body? And that's the big question that goes all the way through the three albums.
It's, you know, one of those albums, well, the three albums, is three definitely you want to sit down and listen to back to back and listen to multiple times to get all these nuances in the story and allow yourself to kind of become enveloped into it, which is what I was able to do. But I was curious, as I was listening to it and listening to the story and all the depths and layers, if you had explored the possibility of this story being put into another medium as well, because it's such a great story.
Well, it started as a book. That's why it hasn't been a struggle with the concept, because after I did my Best Of album, I wrote when I wrote a song with a man called Rick Plester from used to be in a band called World War III called Eating Children, and it was about our solar system being consumed by our sun, which suns die in different ways. Our sun will become a red dwarf. It won't go supernova. And it will consume, it will become so big that all of the planets in the solar system will be consumed by this red giant. And I thought, well, if people know that's going to happen, they will want to escape. And people as rich as Bill Gates and the late Steve Jobs, they will find a way to do this. And Elon Musk has his own space company. And I felt that this was the seed of a story. So I started to write that story. How would the elite, the rich, the super rich, find a way off planet Earth? And how would they find their way to the most habitable planet discovered by the Kepler Space Telescope? And what, of course, we have Euclid going up in 2020. And that telescope will give us more information than all of the telescopes that have ever been on planet Earth. Euclid Space Telescope will have more information. It will have more information than there are physicists and cosmologists and scientists that were able to analyze it. So it's a very, very exciting time. And I thought, that's the seed of a story, because they won't want to do the dirty work. They will need somebody to do the maintenance and the cleaning, and that will be William Black. And he will be on that ship, and they will get him on there to do things, and they really won't care about what he is like as a person. They just need him to survive this trip and keep that ship going so they can get the first ship to the new world so that they can start the colonization of that world. And then they will dispose of William Black. Even though he's been loyal and faithful and kept that ship going and taken care of everything, they will dispose of him. And that was the seed of my story. So I wrote maybe like 6, 7, 8 chapters of this story. And then when we needed to make a new album, okay, it's time for a new studio album, that's all I had. And so I looked and thought, any of these ideas that I've used for my book and these little bits I've connected, will they work as lyrics? And they did. And the sentiment was there and the bits of music seemed to go with it. And that was it. That was the whole part of it. And I spent 2 months coming up with the core of the ideas acoustically. And then we took it into the rehearsal and started work on it full metal and evolved from there. So there is a book now. I'm about a third of the way through that book because the album and the story is taken over from the book. I need to take time off at some point and finish writing that book. And then, and hopefully, I'm not trying to write the best science fiction book ever written, but I'm trying to make something that will be a good read. If you don't know who Blaze Bailey is and me as a singer, that if you like science fiction, it'll be a book that is interesting to read and a satisfying story.
Well, it certainly sounds like you've done your research, and I think that's always one of the most important elements in science fiction. I mean, one of the biggest things that I notice about you is your lyrics. I mean, your lyrics are really engaging and they're really good, and they do tell the story.
Well, thank you very much. It's agony sometimes to get these lyrics, and sometimes they come, and you just have to catch them and write them down, and then it's just a little bit of polishing. And it seems to work great, but some, and they don't appear to, some of the simplest lyrics take the longest time because I'm trying to connect with you and give you a feeling, but I don't want you to be conscious of me telling you, and I don't want you to sound like I'm preaching to you or telling you what to do. I want to engage you and bring you on my journey. I don't want to push you along. And sometimes it's agony over a word or a syllable, because it's not just a lyric that you're going to casually sing. It's something that has to be 100% convincing from the state of mind of the person that you're identifying with at that moment. And it's a huge effort, and it's physically and emotionally draining to do it. But the sense of pride that I have when fans quote my lyrics back at me and sometimes become so enthusiastic they'll write the lyrics and send them back to me, and I think, did I write that? absolutely incredible. It's unbelievable. I never came up with that's far too good for me, but it actually is me, and I'm like, wow, how did that happen? But it's a huge commitment to my fans as well. There's a sacred trust between me and my fans, and my fans trust me to do my absolute best, and they trust that I will follow my instinct and my heart and do the absolute best that I can, and I trust my fans that they will support me. And my fans go, okay, I will send you the money to make your next album. Everybody pre-orders the next album. Here's the money to make it. And they trust me that even if they won't like it, that it will be the best work I can possibly do. And I trust my fans. Well, I want you to please trust me to do this, but I trust you that if I follow my heart and I do my best work, that even if you don't like it, you will understand it and you will see that it was worth supporting me.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind that as I was listening to a lot of your work, that you're definitely, it sounds to me like you're leaning into the you that you became when you joined Iron Maiden and you wrote songs with Steve Harris, and now the songs that I'm hearing, that they have that sound of a continuation, you know, melodically, I guess, is where I'm thinking.
Well, it's a huge influence, and before I worked with Steve Harris and Dave Murray and Yannick Gers, I felt like if I had a good song, it was luck. You know, why did some songs work and some songs didn't work? Working with Steve Harris and with Dave Murray and Yannick Gers, then I got the sense, actually, what I've been missing is there's a lot of technique here, and there's also a lot of confidence. And the main thing that I got working with Steve Harris for Iron Maiden was the level of confidence. No, it's good. It's good. It's good because it feels good, it feels right, and it flows, and we don't care what anybody else says about it because we feel it's good. It's good. That's who we are. We're not trying to be anybody else. And that level of confidence that he gave to me when I came up with things, when we did Man on the Edge and we did Future Real and Virus, then I carried that over. And on my first album, Silicon Messiah, it is that good because it's an absolutely influenced by all the things I learned from Steve Harris. And when you listen through to the three parts of Infinite Entanglement, you can see the Iron Maiden references there. You can see the melodic references vocally and with the guitar, musically, the way the songs are put together. Some are put together very simply. Others follow themselves. They have their own life and arrangement, which you can't predict. And that's all because of that time with Iron Maiden and the lessons I learned from Steve Harris. And also, without Steve Harris, you know, I would never have the voice I have now. Because when I was in the studio on that X Factor album, when we were writing the X Factor, he said, no, there's another part of your voice and we're not using it, and that's what I want to get to. And he found that part of my voice and we recorded it and it became stronger and stronger, and that's the voice I have today. So all of the texture and the emotion that I'm able to command and the control of my voice all started back then on the X Factor album. Before that, I was a singer filled with enthusiasm and passion, but not with a complete voice. And now I feel I have enthusiasm, passion, and the ability to express emotion with my voice that I just didn't have before.
I think on December Wind that absolutely comes through, because I'd mentioned how it's a haunting album. And that's partially, I think, because of your voice and partially because of the work that Thomas does. And Anne Baker, I guess, also does some violin work on it. And, you know, it's one of those things where there is a certain expectation for an acoustic album, or a thought of what an acoustic album is. And because of Thomas's style, because of your voice, it kind of bucks that trend, I believe.
Well, I don't know. We did what was natural to us, and there's a lot of pressure from both sides. Me on to Thomas Weissen, who's this amazing classical guitarist with a fantastic flamenco technique. There's a lot of pressure on me. I don't accept what he can do as limited. I say, well, I want this. I think this is, well, that's not normal. And I go, well, no, I think that's what he's doing. Oh, God, all right, I'll try. I'll try to do it. And he always does. He's an amazing artist, and also a very hard-working man, very competitive. We both are. So if I say, I want it this way, perhaps, you know, are you good enough to do it? It's like, just shut up. He'll get up and he'll do it. And, but then it comes back at me. It comes back. You know what would be great here? One of your really great, long emotional life. I'm going, how long? He goes, longer. And that's it. We just keep pushing each other, challenging each other on that whole December Wind album. It's constantly polish and polish. Is this the right word? Should we use that word there? It's when you're playing this guitar here, should it be that? Should it be picked that way, or should that be a strum? And it's constantly going. And we don't, there's nothing that is you're not allowed to touch on. So we can say anything to each other because we have that kind of relationship over the years. And often it's uncomfortable. And it's like, oh, God, I've put up with this now. But we get on with it. And, you know, we do it because we want to do something great. And our idea that we live for is to do something that will live beyond us. It sounds very grand, but we have to have an ideal, something that you will listen to and go, it's worth listening to again and again and again.
Wow, yeah. So you, on your manager's email, it said that you have a new album, a live album coming out next year, and then a tour?
Yeah, what I'm trying to do is each year record my set list of that year. So have, at the beginning of the tour, you have the studio album that comes out, and you've got that, then we tour that with that studio album, and we have the set list that year. And then at the end of the tour, record live that set list. At the end of it, we should be getting the songs right most of the time. And that's it. And it's a kind of memory of the tour. And we've done our own DVD that we filmed. Rich Pembridge, a very good friend of mine, directed the whole thing, and we placed the cameras where we want, and we lit it the way we wanted to. It's not fancy. It's not technically amazing. What it is a Blaze Bayley concert, a full metal concert, and the connection between me and my fans. And it's that. That's what we tried to capture, and that's what we've got. And so what we hope is that everybody who has the album will get this live album and the live DVD and go, oh, yeah, I remember that part of the show, I remember this. And fans who haven't had the opportunity to see that tour live will go, oh, great, here's something from that tour that I couldn't get to, and it's a really good vibe, and it's something nice from that tour. So that comes out in the new year, and the new tour is the epic tour, we're calling it, because it's the bigger songs mostly that we didn't play from the Entanglement trilogy. There are 32 songs on the Entanglement trilogy, and some of the bigger ones, like The World Is Turning the Wrong Way, we haven't played live. and many fans have asked for them. So next year, the set list will be quite a bit different and big and majestic rather than aggressive. And we hope people will like it, and it's songs that people have really, really asked for, and we're looking forward to playing them.
You know, given that you record this a DVD each year of your set list, and the fact that fans now often feel it's just natural and okay to go to a show and record it on their phone and put it up on YouTube or whatever, how do you feel about that, knowing that you're going to be recording the concert towards the end?
Well, what we said was, for the DVD recording, we had a six camera shoots, and we just said to people, please don't record this, and please don't, you know, put any of the things from the concert on YouTube. And I think most fans have respected that. In a normal gig situation, people come along and they stick their phones up at their favourite songs, and you know, I just think that's the modern world. There's no use moaning about it. That's just how things are now. There are so many great things that I get from the information revolution that I can't complain about it. I'm underground, so my fans come to my show and are really proud of it and excited about it and want to show their friends, well, that's a good thing for me, because I'm never going to get to those people otherwise. And I'm not trying to get big. I'm not trying to play arenas or stadiums. I just like playing the shows I play, small shows, maybe the odd theatre, but generally around 200 to 300 people. And that's the shows that I like to do, so that I can look in the face of almost every fan in the room and I can connect with them. And at every Blaze Bayley headline show, there is a free meet and greet. It's just included. It's thank you. I'm able at every headline show to say thank you to all of the fans that came. They can have photos and have their collection signed if they want. I do that at every show, and that would never, ever change. So I'm very, very lucky to have this incredible support that allows me to do this. I'm not trying to get big. I'm not trying to be more famous. I'm happy where I am now, and I'm very, very lucky that I have these wonderful fans that support me and make it possible for me to be able to live my dream.
You know, that's incredible. You know, it's really interesting, because as we talk to a lot of musicians, it's always fascinating to hear how, like, what they say about the fans and the idea of coming out and talking to them. And I do think it's just so important to be able to have that connection with the fans and to really be able to say hello, because I know as a fan, it means a lot to me when I'm able to go up, shake your hand, and, you know, get a signature on a CD or something.
And you can also tell the difference between that musician that cares and is looking you in the eye and that one who is just doing it because they have to.
Well, sometimes I don't look down on anybody that doesn't do free meet and greet. You know, the world has changed. There are no CD sales or vinyl sales like there used to be. Tours were supported years ago by these fantastic sales of bits of plastic, and that was great. And every big tour ran at a loss. The tickets didn't pay for the tour, but the CD money made up for it. Those days are gone now. It's absolutely finished. Now the tour has to make money. You have to charge people for a meet and greet because you don't get the money coming in from other things that you did. So that's just the way of the world for me. I don't have, outside my music I have just a very modest life, because the most important thing to me is being able to present myself in a way that I can meet my fans that support me and make it possible for me to live this incredible life. And I think maybe it's not important, but it's important for me. For some people, maybe it doesn't matter if they meet the artist or whatever. But for me, if I have fans and they want to say hello and they want a photo, the smallest thing that takes a few seconds, then why not do it? I'm happy to meet my fans. And there are people that have supported me for so many years since, you know, the first things that I've done. And it's just incredible to see people again, tour after tour, and say hello and thank you for your support. And for me to be able to say thank you, I don't know if that's important. You know, maybe sometimes I think, well, it's only important for me. I don't think I'd be any worse off or have less fans if I didn't do that. But I feel I have to do it for myself. I need to be able to say to people, thank you for your support.
So what's the most fun thing for you then about being on stage?
You know, it depends on the stage. There are some nights when there's no barrier and the stage is at just the right height and the room is just the right size and it's full, when I can grab my fans by the face and pull their hair and scream into their faces and my lyrics. So those are really fun moments for me. And sometimes I get to venues and they say, oh, there's no barrier. And I say, well, if the fans get hurt by me, it's your fault. So it's to protect the fans from me that we have the barrier, not the other way around. So that's, you know, I do a lot of very intimate gigs and I'm so lucky. Even in Brazil, I've just been on the Metal Singers Tour in South America, and some people may go, ooh, I don't want to get too close to the fans, they're a bit crazy. And for me, I go, those fans are really better be careful because I'm so crazy. And it just goes like that, you know. I never worry about it. It's I mean, Argentina, man, those guys down there, those fans down there, they're crazy and they're big, man. That's quite a scary audience to play to. But even so, you get amongst it and get down in the front, and if you can, if the stage is the right size, and get people, you've got 10, 20 guys singing down the mic with you and all of that. It's a fantastic, fantastic feeling of brotherhood in music and in metal. And it's a very, very special feeling. I'm very lucky. I get that all over the world, whether I'm playing in Germany, France, Sweden, whether it's in Argentina or Chile or Brazil or Peru or Mexico or Los Angeles or New York or way up in Quebec City. I get that everywhere I go, I'm able to connect with my fans in a very real and visceral way. And that's the thing I enjoy most about it. The other thing that I say is, when I get to a venue, and it's all in the contract, they know it beforehand, there must be 1 hour after the finish of my set for signing and photos with my fans. And if they don't put that hour in because they want to sell more booze or anything, then I cancel the show. I say to people, if there is no meet and greet, there is no gig. Because for me, it's a part of the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Really makes me, hope I get the chance to see you. You were in Canada, last year, I guess, but we're out in Western Canada. We didn't get a chance to see you. So.
Yeah, we haven't had the opportunity to go over there. I would love to go there, full metal or acoustic. I would like to go all over to West Coast of Canada. I've just never had the opportunity. Would love to do it. So we're building, and it's early days for me in Canada and USA. I have some great support in Quebec and in the west of Canada, so I'd really love to get over to your side. I'd really love to come and play there. So please keep telling the local promoters to ask for me. I'm easy to book. You go to blazebailey.net and send an email asking to book me. So I would love to go there. We're coming over in spring this year, in May, and end of April, I think early May. And so please keep hammering away at people. Would love to come over there and perform for you.
Well, that's great. I mean, we sure hope that we'll bring it up to any promoters we can, and hopefully we can get Blaze Bailey over here to Calgary. Because I know we would be in the audience. We'd be ready to get our hair pulled and get screamed at. So, yeah.
What little hair we have left, we're older guys. You know,
get over there. I'd absolutely love it.
Well, Blaze, we've taken up a lot of your time, and we thank you so much because you've been a wonderful guest, and we appreciate everything that you do. So we're going to give you this opportunity, as we do, to promote everything that you have coming out, how people can get the album and all that stuff.
Okay, well, please visit Facebook, and it's official Blaze Bailey on Facebook. On Instagram, I'm just Blaze Bailey. And go to my website, which is blazebailey.net. And there is a link, which I'll send you later. You can sign on to my email list. And every so often, we will send you out an email of exactly what we're doing. I'm underground. I'm not in the mainstream magazines or on mainstream radio most of the time. I'm completely supported by my fans around the world, and I'd love to have your support.
Well, we are more than happy to give you our support, and I hope that everybody gives a listen to December Wind, because it's amazing. Infinite Entanglement is just as amazing. I mean, that trilogy, oh, so good. Your work is impeccable right now, and I hope you get to carry on for as long as you want to.
Okay, well, thank you very much for having me on the show, and I'd like to say a huge thank you to all of my fans who've waited for me and who have supported me. Thank you so much for your support. Cheers, thank you.
Blaze Bailey, all the best. Thank you so much.
Okay, cheers. Merry Christmas to everybody.
Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, mate. Bye-bye.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
I get in from work at 2 a.m. and sit down with a beer. Turn on late night TV and then I wonder why I'm here. It's meaningless and trivial and it washes over me. And once again I wonder, is this all there is for me? Here I am again. Look at me again. Here I am again, on my own, trying hard to see what there is for me. Here I am again, on my own. Life seems so pathetic, I wish I could leave it all behind. this canvas chair, this bed, these walls that fall in on my mind. Hold on for something better that just drags you through the dirt. Do you just let go or carry on and try to take the hurt? Here I am again, look at me again. Here I am again, on my own, trying all to see what there is for me. Here I am again, on my own.
Machine. The remnant of a more complete and beautiful dead dream. The thunder, the ambition, and the worst of human thought. I never asked to be this way, but I accept it all. Are you here? Each second of each minute of each hour I search for you. My glory walks along now hand in hand with my own doom. I heard your voice so many times when I thought I was dead. Illusions of the human, was it only in my head? Are you here? Are you here? You told me to feel. Are you of atomic physics lies a truth. 1,000 times more love than a proton it is in you. The particle accelerator has no fear of God. It's all creation now explained by